Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writer's Book Club. This week on Blondie and the Brit, I'm excited to introduce you to KJ Waters. She is the best-selling author of the time travel series Stealing Time and also the short story called Blow. The second book in her series, Shattering Time, is in development right now and is slated to be released in the fall of 2016. KJ is the CEO of Blondie's Custom Book Covers and also, much more important, the blonde side of Blondie on the Brit, the co-host of the popular, very popular podcast, Blondie and the Brit. Welcome, KJ.
Thank you. Thank you so much. How exciting to be introduced by my co-host.
Yay! Oh, it's so good to interview you. So first of all, Blondie, KJ, tell us about your book. Tell us about Stealing Time, the book that you wrote and published last year.
Okay, well, Stealing Time is a time travel thriller. It's set in 2004 in Florida, and that summer we had four major hurricanes hit Florida. It's like one of the first times in recorded history that that many storms hit one state. And so that's the setting of it. Ronnie Andrews goes to her boyfriend's weather lab during the storm and inexplicably ends up in 1752 London. So it goes into a whole different mode of like historical fiction. She's a modern woman back in time trying to figure out how to get back to 2004. And the other half of the story is her best friend, Stephanie McKay, who is from Glasgow but lives in Florida. And she's in the storm. Various events bring her out into the middle of the hurricane and you kind of proceed with some storm coverage and that kind of thing from her end. So it's been called a riveting page turner. It's very different, I think, than most things on the market. And it was a blast to write.
Yeah. And as you said, you started writing in 2004. So all you people out there that are like, will I ever get started? KJ wrote this for a really long time before she eventually got to the point of getting published. Why did it take you so long to get it published?
Well, most of it was, I was a new writer and I was kind of just figuring it out. And it was more of a hobby at first. So I would write when I felt like it, you know, in the summers, I'd have a lot more time. And then other times, like I moved across the country, I had surgery, I had various things go on in my life that I just kind of set it aside for a while. But I was always thinking about it. Coming up with different angles and story development. And I started writing it and realized that it really should be three different books in a trilogy. So I have a lot more material than I did for the first book. And in 2012, I finally got serious and decided to finish the first of the three books. And then now I'm starting on the second book with the material that I've already, you know, pretty much written. So,
you wrote a huge amount of material. That's what you're saying. You wrote enough for three books.
Yeah, it's been a great journey. I've had a lot of fun. I spent so much time getting the first book ready after writing it. It was like editing and rewording and all this stuff. Now I'm starting on the second book and turning it more into the story. And it's back to the creative, exciting, you know, when you're creating the story. So
totally. That's just like our favorite part. It's been in there creating the story, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I've got the outline. But, you know, like even last night I was writing and I came up with this whole different thing. I'm like, oh, my God, that's a whole different layer that I didn't think of. And I don't get into that little mode until I'm writing. So even though I have an outline, I'm sure it's going to have all these extra twists and turns that I hadn't originally come up with. So that's the fun part for me.
Me too. I'm the same way. I outline a little bit. And then I love it when the characters start telling me stuff and moving in their own direction. That is so fun when that happens because that's you working with them. And it's a really fun journey for me.
Yeah.
So tell me, so 2004, so you saw these hurricanes. Where did you get the idea? Were you just within the hurricanes? You know, were you part of what was going on in Florida?
Yeah.
I've got to write something about this. What was the stimulus that pushed you forward to write about it?
We ended up moving to a different state. So we moved to Florida. 3 days later, Hurricane Charlie hit, then Hurricane Ivan, Francis, Jean. And all within like a 6-week
period. Oh my gosh, it's like a whole bunch of saints.
It was. Well, and it's crazy because like 60 years before Central Florida and, you know, Florida had been hit by a major hurricane, but it had been 60 years in between. So it's like, I show up for 3 days and hey, Jay, what can I say? The waters are here. Let's attack with some hurricanes. Welcome to Florida. So it's kind of
And weird. What was your first experience? Was that kind of a really scary experience for you the first time?
Well, okay. The first time I was in a hurricane, I grew up in Maryland and went to school. I've lived all up and down the East Coast. And so I've been in, I don't know, in my lifetime, I've probably been in about 20 hurricanes and tropical storms. So it certainly wasn't my first experience. It was the first one that was, you know, much strong. It was hurricane strength when it hit. It most usually in Maryland, by the time it gets to you, it's come over a lot of land and it's not as strong. So it was scary. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I bet. I've been through a couple of tornadoes and that's enough for me.
Yeah.
So you were thinking about, and did you suddenly just have this idea, what if it took you and time traveled you, or was it, I mean, it's a way back, so you've obviously
got that's a great question. What got me the idea, okay, so the storms happened in 2004, and I stopped working. I was a stay-at-home mom then, so I was with my children and kind of looking for a creative outlet, and I always was intimidated by writing. I have a master's degree and spent a lot of time writing, and it was the first time in my life that I actually felt like writing wasn't this terrible chore. But I never really wrote creatively. I wrote mostly for marketing materials and things like that. So I read, there's an author that I really like named Diana Gabaldon. She does the Outlander series, and she has a book called The Outlandish Companion. And in that, she talks about how she writes. She writes a scene and then, completely unrelated, writes another scene and just has these inspirational moments. And then she connects them all later. And I thought, heck, that's a very creative way to write. That is not the linear model that, you know, I assumed that most authors did. And I thought, shoot, if she can do it and be that successful, there's no reason I can't even try. So I ran out and got some writing books and started in 2005. We drove from Florida to Maine on vacation. I had lots of hours in the car with short blonde people behind me. And I started laying it out, and I just kept having idea after idea. And that's so cool.
And, you know, we should really, you know, that's really good to know, is that sometimes I think this is this big thing, like we've got to create all this story. But just thinking about scenes, that's small, that's easy.
Yeah.
We can all come up with scenes. And I love the fact that that spurred you to actually start writing, because it felt doable.
Yeah.
In a car, you know, with the little people behind you, you know?
Yeah, it was doable. And then one thing that really helped me, too, is I went out and bought Evan Marshall's book, The Marshall Plan, and we interviewed him a few episodes back. And that really helped me because it gives you a structure. I'm not a structure person, but this lays out a structure for you so I could put in all my creative ideas into a format that would then be a good novel. So it kind of took out some of the guesswork for me on the part of it that I felt I was a little bit weaker. So with that book in hand is where I created the story. And granted, it took me 9 years, but I did it.
But you had young children, so, you know.
Yeah. And I moved and I had all these other things happening. But 2012, also the thing that spurred me was that I got onto Twitter and I started first I was being goofy and just, you know, looking at celebrities and wasteful things like that. But
we all follow celebrities at the beginning and that soon goes.
It's like
right? Pointless.
They're never going to talk to me. But anyway, then I realized, hey, there's authors out here too. So the first person I met that actually spoke back to me was Kirkus McGowan.
Is that right? Oh my gosh, I love
that. Yeah, Kirkus McGowan, and he's an indie author. I don't talk to him very much anymore. I think he went into his hidey hole and he's writing this very epic fantasy. So we haven't seen him in a while. But anyway, he was telling me about how, you know, self-publishing and all this stuff, and it was not a concept I'd ever heard of or thought about. But part of the reluctance, too, was traditional publishers. I met with a guy once I moved here, and he was telling me, you know, so you submit your manuscripts, and maybe 2 years later they'll tell you no or yes or whatever. And I was like, that was such a long process. I want instant gratification. And self-publishing, you have that choice. So I looked into it, and I thought, shoot, why not just go for it that way? And then if you know, what I found out later through research and, you know, talking to other authors is if you have a really strong platform, social media platform, a really good book, that's when publishers will come to you and start looking at your stuff. Or even if you go out to them, you're at least not like nobody. You have a presence and fans Right. And a connection to the outside world that you can bring something to the table when you talk to a publisher. So that was my strategy. And that's
really good just to point that out to people, that what you just said was, you know, if you're wondering about social media and you're not selling your book on social media, don't worry, because you're building that platform. And that's just as valuable as actually selling your book on Twitter, right?
It is. I think without your social media platform, if you're an indie author and you don't have a social media platform, I don't know what your plan is to sell. You have nobody out there. I mean, you can sell to your family and a couple of your friends, but that's going to end at about, you know, you get your 100 people and that's it. We're going to go.
That's right. You get your 100 people.
So as soon as you decide you're writing a book, you need to start working on your social media platform. That is crucial. I had 2 years before I released my book where I was building Twitter and Facebook. And then, of course, I've branched out to, I guess, everyone out there, maybe Pinterest and Instagram and all those. And, you know, I don't do a whole lot in every platform, but I'm mostly Twitter and Facebook that I spend a lot of time, and I have a good chunk of followers and a pretty decent platform, at least enough people that, you know, as I start promoting this stuff, that people get clicks and they start sharing it and they look at stuff. And so it's a bunch of people that are interacting with you that are then ready, if they're interested, to buy your book. So.
Yeah. And I think we're also just, you know, to be aware that, you know, people aren't going to always buy the first time. They need to get to know you. They may look at two or three different times. And you have to be out there doing something.
Yeah.
So I have an interesting question. So you started writing in 2004. You picked it up in 2012. Did your writing process change?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of it changed. Kids were the main factor for when I would be able to write. So, okay, at first it was when they napped, and then when they outgrew naps, it was when they went to bed. And now that they're all up late, it's like, oh God, now they're all at school. Thank goodness I have some time. So in terms of timing of that, I have gotten a whole lot more efficient when I write. Now I can sit down. Like at first, you kind of have to train your brain to get into that space where you can talk to your characters and get all of that creativity down in a format that would be decent writing for a book.
Right.
And a lot of that is just experience. There's some quotes out there that say you have to write 1 million words before you write good words for a book.
Wow.
So, you know, that was part of it. Was a lot of what I go back to when I wrote in 2005 and 6. It's not good writing, but it's kind of neat for me to see how much I've improved. You know, when I sit down now, like what I was doing at first is like trying to reword what I wrote. I've got this outline. I'm trying to reword it. And I'm like, now I'm just bag it. I look at it and see what the content is. And then I write it fresh because I'm so much better of a writer. Just the experience. And I've read a lot of books and blogs and learned a lot from other people of, you know, what good writing is, how to cut out the extra words and all those little tips that you use. So now when I write, I sit down and write. It's actually... that's what my book will be. I'll make some edits and shift things around and maybe take out a little extra paragraphs that don't go anywhere. But most of it comes out good enough that it's, you know, worth keeping, which it didn't used to be.
Good. Right. So you now have that situation where you can just, you're already in that place. So because you don't actually have chunks of time that you actually sit down like for 2 hours, you tend to write in between different things, events. How does that work? We'd laugh about it. I know the answer. This is why I'm asking it.
Well, I force myself, and it's not really forcing, but every time I take my kid to piano, that's when I write. I don't do anything else. I have other things I could be doing. I write my book then. When I take her to gymnastics, same thing. I just kind of take it where I can. And then evenings, actually now evenings, it used to be that I would take, you know, once the kids were in bed, I would start writing. Now I'm doing podcast editing. So that time has been filled in.
No, we're so glad we started the podcast. It's really helping your writing.
It's helping my writing. But it's important to do that. You know, it's got to get done and it's worth my time. But hopefully we're working on getting someone to help with that part. And then I'll go back to the evenings when the kids are down. It's impossible for me to write with short people running amok, you know.
Right.
Every 30 seconds, people ask me, why are you on social media? Why are you not writing? I'm like, well, because my head pops off after about a half an hour because I get interrupted every 30 seconds.
And that's what we're going to call the interview. Katie and her head popping off.
Since I did that, Alan, and Suzanne, you actually helped me a whole lot this summer. You talked me into using these enormous post-it notes. No lie, it's like 3 feet by 4 feet to take.
It works great, though, doesn't it?
Well, it does, because what it made me do is you could see it all at once. It's not in the computer where you're like, you can see a few paragraphs at a time. It was such a good way for me to visually map it out. And the other thing I did that you prompted me on was to do the mind mapping. So you, like, yeah. I write Ronnie is the character and draw a circle around the name. And then on this huge pad, so I have lots of room, every idea I could possibly think of her storyline for the character. And then for the way I write is that the main character has the main storyline and then they have a subplot. So I did the same thing with her subplot. And then I did each character. And then from that is when then I turned the character outline, I wrote down everything that Ronnie did in order of her sequence and then each character. And then I took all of that and combined it into the sequential order for the story so that, you know, if Jeffrey does something that has to have these three things happen first, you know, you can't just have it in his order. It's got to be in order of the storyline. So I'm kind of planning out what the next section I'm going to write. Now, right now I have a very detailed character outline. So each character has exactly what scenes they're going to do, which chapters. And then I have it also done in order of the novel. So I can go to either one of those and find out what it is I need to write in that one chapter.
You know what I love about you, KJ, and this is really valuable to you that are out there listening there, if you're thinking about writing a book, is the fact is you work around all of that. I mean, I think people, I know when I first was writing, I expected, I wanted the desk by the window with the perfect flowers and the vase. You know, it was, I had this vision of what a writer looked like and what they did.
Yeah.
And then you would sit down, listen to music, and you would type once upon a time.
Magically.
You know, but the reality is that isn't our lives. We don't have the opportunity to have even a space sometimes. Sometimes we're writing on our lap. And so if you're a writer out there waiting for the perfect time, the perfect death, the perfect whatever, then listen to what KJ is really saying. And that's what I love about listening to you is the fact that you really make it work. You figure around all those obstacles and still write. There's just no excuse to not write. There's always a time, there's always a place.
Right. Well, I did the other version, the 9 years where it'd be like 2 months, 3 months without even looking at it. So,
but it sounds like you're always, even when you're now compared to that time, even when you're not actually physically writing, you're still thinking about it. You're thinking about it before you go to write. You're thinking about it, you know, during the week. And I think that's the key is that just because you're not actually physically at a keyboard doesn't mean you can't be in story.
Oh,
you know, for a person that doesn't have the time to sit down yet, then on a walk, when you're babysitting, whatever you're doing, be thinking about what can I do in the next scene when I do get the opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And then when you do get that minute, first of all, it's going to spur you to make that minute because sometimes you have to make the time. You're supposed to be doing, you know, ask my husband, is the laundry done? No. Is the house clean? No. But I wrote. And he doesn't really care about that part of it, but I do.
That's right.
I do. I made the time.
You're great because you know what you're doing, KJ? You're stealing time.
I am stealing time. That should be the name of the podcast.
No, there you go. Look at that. That was good. See, I'm a good host. Huh? I'm good at
you are. And I have to tell you something funny about that. My first radio interview where I was in studio, I gave them each a copy of the signed book and I gave them a little flyer thing that has, you know, all the information on it. This is a summary. They sat down to talk to these two people and one of them asked me, you know, so tell us about your book. It's about stealing time to get your work done. You know, and I was like, no, it's time travel fiction. It was just like, good job preparing.
They were hoping for some tips.
Oh my God. I was like, seriously, you don't even know what you're interviewing me about. It was so like,
you totally should have given them a whole bunch of stuff that it wasn't about. Well, here we go. What you need to do on a Monday.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, you just asked me all the questions about stealing time, but that would make more sense than, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, good job.
So tell us about your vision for the series and the book. I mean, obviously you're still working on book two right now. And do you have any kind of idea when you're hoping to get that to a place where it can be published?
I'm hoping to get it out this fall.
These things never go like I think they will, but at least I'm much more efficient when I do work, when I write, and also when I organize my time. So I'm hoping that that's possible. I would like to do one each year. So then the following spring, I would have the third book out. And I just completely figured out about 2 months ago, I figured out what book three is going to be. And it's so mind blowing. I hope I really surprise all my writers. The reason I did that was because in book two, I have spread all these little hints about things that will then connect to book three, which
dun,
you
dun, 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 dun.
Hopefully be invisible. And that's what I did with the first book.
Yeah.
People, when you read that book, if you didn't, I hope you try it out. I have some really big twists in there that if you're paying close attention, you will find. And there's been a couple people that have found the big twist. Most people don't know it, and which will be fun too, because then when they hopefully read the second book, they'll be like mind blown. Oh my gosh, I didn't even notice that piece, and there it was all along. So it's been so much fun. That's like half the joy is like, how can I surprise my readers? And
yeah, that's great, though. I think that's great.
Yeah, it's fun.
And that's fun because when it actually is a trilogy, when it's out, people will, that will spur them to buy the next one straight away to figure out, you know, what some of those things mean. I think that's great.
Right, and you can even read them. I think it will be easily enough to read them out of order. Each one's a standalone story. So if you read the second book and you realize, you know, how did these things come about? Then you go back to it and you will already know, you know, where he ended up in that one place that now ties into the second book. And, you know, you'll have...
It has almost an Outlander feel to it, right?
Yes, it does. There's some really cool twists and turns. In her book, it was all back in one time period. Now, my first book all goes back to 1752 London. In the second book and the third book, it mixes it up. There's different places. There's different things. Yeah, I've had so much fun with this. And one of my inspirations is my son. I'll come up with an idea, and then I'm so excited. I run to him and say, what do you think? And then he's this mastermind. He thinks like 12 steps ahead of me and is like, well, how does this fit into here? And then what if you did this with that part that was back? And so he kind of helps me. He's got like the big picture, and I come in with the nitty gritties. And he,
you got a little helpmate there.
Yeah, yeah. And he's my little science genius. So he understands string theory and all these like highfalutin time travel and particle theory stuff. So like he ties him in. So, he's like, oh, yeah, you can do this with the fifth dimension. I'm like, holy crap. What's that?
What the hell is the fifth dimension?
That's kind of cool. I knew now because he has instructed me on what the fifth dimension is.
That's amazing.
If anyone needs to know, Google it.
Yeah, it sounds really exciting. So where can people get your book? I mean, somebody wants to go get Stealing Time to get themselves ready for book two.
Oh, yes. It is available on Amazon. I have it at Barnes & Noble. It's on iTunes. It's on Kobo, Scribd, all kinds of stuff.
Whatever that is.
I'm on Smashwords.
Basically, throw a rock and you hit the book. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And it's paperback. It's ebook, and I really, really want to do audio. I've had a lot of people tell me.
I think you'll make a great audio book.
Yeah, too, I think so too.
I've actually read it, and I'm a little biased, I guess, because you're my friend, but I couldn't stop turning the pages. It was a real, I really wanted to know what was going to happen next.
Yay! Well, good. That's kind of what I was going for, so.
There you go. It really worked.
Yay!
So, just to kind of wrap up the interview, you're obviously been writing for a while now. Have you got any tips, like, so either social media tips, or have you got tips for, like, authors that are just starting out, that are nervous, that are trying to figure out what genre they want to write? Have you got any kind of tips like that that would be encouraging for new authors?
Yes. I think the biggest thing is to, if you're deciding to write a book, start your platform now. Even if you're 2 years out, you really need that time to build your audience and create relationships with people. Network with other authors, but also focus on trying to find readers. So there's some tools out there, you know, with Twitter, use your hashtags to try to get, you know, I am reading, I am writing, things like that, where you get readers. So if you want to go onto my site, people listening, at Kamajowa, Kamajowa. I know it's horrible, but I don't
know. Say it again, just a bit slower. Okay.
Well, we'll have it on the show notes too, but Kamajowa, and just follow who I'm following. I have a smattering of authors, but I've also worked hard to try to get readers. And those are the people that are going to buy your book. Authors are fun to talk to and network with. And, you know, if they retweet your stuff, it goes to their readers. But what you really want is, you know, to make actual connections with readers. So that is crucial. So if you're focusing on Twitter as your platform, one of your platforms, you need to go every day, follow 10, 15, 20 people. And when you get to your 1,000 limit, or if they're raising that, you want to go in to get one of those tools like Crowdfire that will allow you to, it's an app, and you can either have it on your phone or on your computer. It goes in and it unfollows people that are inactive accounts. It unfollows people who aren't following you back. It kind of declutters your Twitter feed so that you can follow more people. There'll be a point at which you can't follow anyone else until you know, have a different ratio. You have to have a certain ratio of followers to following. Facebook I use a lot. I really enjoy it. It's a little bit easier to connect with people. The problem with it is just it's a little bit smaller. And if you want to get your full reach of all the people following, you have to buy ads. So that's a little bit frustrating. But I find it a lot easier to make a, you know, you can have a longer conversation with someone. It seems like there's a lot more interaction with people on a daily basis. Where Twitter, it's a little bit more hit or miss. I just read an interesting article about using Pinterest for your brand, for your company.
Didn't you just send me an article about that?
Yeah, I did, actually. Yeah. You have one of your boards, you need 10 boards to start, and one of your boards should be in a different color background. You want to have pictures of your logo and your branding, everything that you have on other social media so people easily recognize it. You want to have links to things. When you click on a picture, it'll send a link to that place. Okay, so the one board that you want to be most popular, or there's some really good analytics on Pinterest now, the one board that is your most popular or you're wanting to be most popular, it says in this article that you should post 20 times a day.
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't really have that kind of investment. But on Buffer, which I use to schedule Facebook, Twitter, G+, and now you can do Pinterest there. The nice thing about it is that you have an image. You can write as much as you want in description. And they say in that description, you want to put in the link so that as they're reading it, they can go to that place. And then
that's a really good idea. That's a really good tip for Pinterest. I like that one.
Yeah. And then Pinterest is getting much bigger for businesses too. So you take your Pinterest post and you put it out on Twitter and you put it on Facebook.
It's attractive as well.
Yeah, it's a nice picture, but then it's not just like Instagram. It's a picture and, you know, there's not much conversation about it. This then, anyone that's following that board will see it. Anyone that's following you, if it's your popular board, will see some of that stuff. So
that's really good.
I'm going to try that and we'll see. Find the platform that you're most comfortable with.
Comfortable with, yeah.
And learn it really well. And then you can branch out to some other things. You don't have to be in every single one. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of them all. And then like with Suzanne, why don't you tell them your tip about how you do Hootsuite and Buffer. When do you do that?
Yeah. I do a similar thing. There's another similar kind of thing, and it's called Hootsuite. And basically, is every Sunday evening, I actually go into my own magazine, my own online magazine, and I actually pull out great articles all that week. I follow people who have great articles that people that my followers enjoy, and I just schedule them all in for the week. So in 2 hours, my tweets are ready to go out, and then I just respond each day, 2 or 3 times a day, if people come back with something. But then at least you've got content going out all the time.
Right.
So Buffer's similar. I mean, Hootsuite, there's also TweetDeck. That's another one. I haven't used that one for a while. I used to use TweetDeck. But they're all great. And if you're about to do social media, go learn TweetDeck or go learn Buffer or go learn Hootsuite, because these things will really help you in the long run as far as the different things that you can do.
Right. And the nice thing about it, too, is that, like, I don't know about on Hootsuite, but on Buffer, you can have it analyze your followers and what times they're on. So when you put your post out, it helps you put them out when they're actually there looking at it.
Going to be there. That's right. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. And so it comes up with a schedule X number of times a day and each account. So I have, like I said, I have Blondie and the Brit Facebook and Twitter. I have, you know, all the other accounts. I have Facebook and Twitter. And then I have the Pinterest and G+ and LinkedIn. LinkedIn is another one. They're all on my Buffer. Right. And I mean, I haven't done this, but I love your tip about doing that. Like on a Sunday, you just set it up for the week. Then there's no pressure if you get really busy with stuff or if you're trying to find that hour in your day to write your book. Your Buffer or your Hootsuite is doing the job for you. And then what you still want to do is, you know, not be the robot and push your material out. What you want to do is have it be a not just about your selling stuff, but articles that are interest of people. But also then you have to interact with people. So that's when you fill it in, you know, and that makes it, that's actually the fun part. Creating the tweets and stuff when you're trying to respond to everybody's answers makes it hard. So to do it all at once. And I haven't done it yet, but this weekend, that is what I'm going to do. I have to
say. You go, girl. So, Stealing Time obviously was your first novel in the series. Recently, you've just published another book. Do you want to tell us more about that?
Yes. I went on a retreat with Suzanne in February. And one of the things that we talked about is, you know, kind of how to create momentum towards my second book. And I had a prologue to my second book, Shattering Time. I had a prologue that was a little storm sequence. And as I was talking to Suzanne, you know, one of the things that we were talking about was to have release something sooner so that I had another thing for people to look at that's kind of building momentum towards my second book, which I'm hoping to have out this fall. So I thought, you know, now's a good time. So I took the prologue and I built it into a short story. And, you know, the whole time I'm doing it, I'm thinking, I'm not writing the second book. Is this a waste of time? You know, I really was trying to get momentum towards finishing the second book. But it turns out that it was a huge, amazing thing to do, because what I ended up doing is I didn't tell anyone about it. I mean, Suzanne knew and a few other people knew, but I kind of teased it at a Facebook party. We had a launch party for Suzanne's book, and she's the number one bestselling author. So it was kind of like this really exciting moment. But throughout the entire party, I kind of teased the fact that I had something I was really, you know, something coming up, and I gave them little pictures and teasers. At the end of the party, I showed them the book cover, and then I showed them gave them a free copy. And
tell us the name of the book. Oh,
it's called Blow.
So that's where the teaser were like pictures of things blowing.
Yes,
right?
The hair dryer, someone blowing bubbles, various different things. So anyway, the short story is called Blow, and it's during Hurricane Ivan. Rick Harris is in the middle of the hurricane, and it's a Category 4 storm. It was a huge storm, and he's in Pensacola along the coast. And during the storm, two people come to his house, that one of them he knows, the other one he doesn't, and they come in for shelter, finds out in the middle of the storm that the other guy's an undercover cop. And so the tension builds because Rick has a few dark secrets that he's hiding. And the only way to make sure they're safe during the storm is to go where these secrets are. So that's what the story is about. It's very fast paced. It's kind of a thriller, kind of a crime thriller type thing. And the funniest thing is that Suzanne texted me the next day, Saturday, and I wasn't feeling great. And I hadn't like really been on social media at all. I had not tweeted or put up on Facebook anything about my book at all. Nothing. She tells me.
Just the party. Basically just the party.
Just the party. Got released at the party. So everyone was at the party, you know, they went and looked at her or whatever. I was ranked at number 60 in the short story category for teens and young adults. And I'm like, first of all, I didn't put it in teens and young adult. But second of all, I'm like, I hadn't even promoted it yet. And it was already at number 60. So to me, that was huge, because the last time I released a book was a year ago. And there's not a lot of momentum right now. I'm still writing the book and, you know, I'm on social media and talking to people and stuff, but I haven't really done any writing stuff. And for people that have just met me and haven't really seen me release a book, this is a great way to get something quick out to people so they can see my writing style. And then there's a little tie-in to the series, to the Stealing Time series, so that when my book two comes out, hopefully the new people that have found Blow and then have got hooked into that storm story will then go, you know, running over to buy the second book that comes out. So far it's paid off. It's only been a week. It's been on a week. And I'm on the hot new releases right now. I just found out like a half hour ago or whatever that Amazon likes it. And so it's doing really well. So I'm hoping to get up to the number one slot, so that I can then say I'm a number one bestselling author. And that, I think, will help, you know, with any of the future books that I put out.
Absolutely. So just tell us a little bit, where did you actually get, you actually did start promoting like that Sunday or something, didn't you, like the next day?
Well, when you told me I was,
did you get up to?
When you told me I was number 60, I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. So I was like, I guess I should probably put it on my Facebook page and tweet it out. So I started making some memes and various things to tweet out. So I started tweeting. And then I think it was Sunday or Monday, I made it to number 8.
Yeah.
And then the next day.
I think that's really important for people to know that even though it got to number 60 from the party, that you got it to number 8 by being out there on social media.
Yes.
And it's not like you have 100,000 followers. You have how many thousand followers do you have?
I have several different accounts, and between them I have probably about 23,000.
Good number, but still, how many times did you tweet out? How much did you actually do on social media, do you think?
Well, so I tweeted, I think I was doing several different tweets, maybe 4 or 5 an hour, and then several Facebook posts in there too. Put it on G+, you know, just the usual things. I did put it up on Instagram, just one little post up on Instagram. So, you know, not even a huge amount. And when I say a couple an hour, that was like maybe 4 or 5 hours on Sunday. And then, right. you know, went into work Monday and I was still messing around with it and still tweeting it out, but not like crazy.
But you did get reviews, right, from that?
Yes. Before I released it at the party, I had several people read it and ask them for reviews. I didn't know if they would or not. It's not people that I've really necessarily done that before. So I started a street team just like the week before, hoping that some of these people who had expressed interest in my writing would then come through. And not all of them did, but several of them did put reviews up either before the party or since then. And it's really helped. I looked at some of the other books that are in the same genre as me, and they have like one review. The new release is one review, maybe two reviews. So I think that helps. And then other people see the reviews, and I think that helps them want to buy it.
Yeah.
And also, I think that it helps as people are looking at their views. They may actually go click on your page or...
Right. So just to recap, here's the things you said. Is if you have a series that you're building, particularly you, it's a very long... You do very long books, right, in your genre. Is it like 90,000, 100,000 words or something you were telling me for your
yeah,
genre?
Yeah, Stealing Time was 115,000, so it...
Yeah, so they're big books.
It takes a long time, yeah.
So it's a long time between for readers in between, to not to forget you, but not to have anything to read. So
right.
if you have a series that you're building like that, you may want to consider, for many reasons, putting a book out in between a short story. How many words, how many thousand words was it, KJ?
Blow with, I have a preface and then I have a teaser into my second book. I had like 7,000, 8,000 words with all that.
It's big. It's big enough for a good read, but it's not like it's an essay or anything. So it's a good read. And then also, what did it do for you? It helped momentum. It got new people to know your name. It also gives you two books on your author page.
Yep.
So it makes you look like more. And then people can see there's a series coming. Just visually they can see that, which I think is really important. And then as well as that, it got you a best-selling status because you became top 10 in, I think, two categories, wasn't it? Two categories?
Yeah.
Well, but still top 20. So,
yeah, top 20 in three categories.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So I think this is really good advice for people who are in the midst of writing a huge series. So I think that's really a great piece of advice.
Yeah, absolutely. And because it took about a month to write it. I'd already written the thing, but to build it into a short story with a beginning, middle, and end. And then I paid an editor to take care of it and develop the book cover. So it was about a month and a half. Plus,
right.
I have a little teaser in this short story heading into the second book. So I'm hoping that that will build some interest towards the series and the second book.
Fabulous. No, that sounds really great.
Yeah.
So I think that's really good advice. Okay, so why don't we go into the... You want to do the lightning round? You've never done a lightning round, I don't think.
Scared.
Let's do a lightning round.
I don't even know some of these things. Even though I ask these questions every week of other people, there's a few on here that scare me because I'm like, I don't know.
I was saying what I did. I was like, I should pay more attention. The trouble is when you're actually reading the questions, you're only thinking about the next question and listening to what their response
yeah.
is. You're not actually thinking about the question itself. So.
I know.
So you ready?
We'll see what comes out of my face.
Shoulders back.
Shoulders back.
Okay. Off we go then. So what is your favorite band or artist?
Oh, gosh. I think at the moment it's 21 Pilots. If you asked me a year ago, 2 years ago, it probably would have been will.i.am or the Black Eyed Peas.
So you change your answer.
It depends. Yeah, I don't stick with one thing. I get bored with the same one.
Okay, so left coast or right coast?
I got to say... the right coast, because that includes everywhere I've lived other than Dirtville, so up and down the East Coast.
What is your favorite writing spot?
Probably where I'm sitting right now. There's a love seat in my bedroom. I can shut the door. I have a window where I can see the trees blowing around, the Dirtville trees.
Dirtville trees?
But yeah, they're little short trees.
Cool. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
I am a, what was that word you came up with, Suzanne? Plunther.
A plunther.
When I first wrote Stealing Time, which now is what I initially wrote, is now four books. When I first wrote that, it was just whatever came out. And then I went back and I plotted and added lots of layers and pieces. So I think I'm a combination of both.
And I must say one thing, because I know you, is that you have done a lot of learning along the way. You not only wrote that first book, you've really studied a lot of the craft. So
yes.
You've been learning. So as you've been learning, you've been adding that to the book, right?
Yes, exactly.
Your process. So,
exactly.
yeah. If you were transported back in time, where would you go?
Well, I discovered in researching Stealing Time that I don't want to be in the 18th century and a woman. So I can't remember who said it, but one of our people, I think it was Emily, decided that she would change her gender. So I could be a man and go back and have a much better time.
Yeah, you'd be better off as a man.
So if I were choosing, I would choose the Caribbean as a man in the early 19th century.
What was going on in the Caribbean? Any idea? Probably not.
Well, yeah, there was pirates and pirates and rum trade, and I think it would be fun that, you know, that was the pristine Caribbean too. There wasn't all this tourist crap. There's no oil spilled on the shores of Jamaica.
Right, that's true. It's all a bit different. But they also had things like the plague, so, you know.
Well, minor problems.
If you had a superpower, what would you want it to be?
Well, you know, we've had all these great answers from other people, but one of the superpowers that I've always wanted to have would be to breathe underwater.
Really?
So that I could, it's such a useless skill, but I have had so many dreams where that is what I'm doing. I'm swimming. I never have to come up for air.
Nice. That's kind of fun.
I don't know. I think if I were being smarter and more practical, I'd choose to see. If I'd had my cup of coffee, I'd be answering differently. I would be saying something practical like time travel or, you know, something.
I think swimming underwater is good, you know, to breathe. That's kind
of fun. Doesn't give me much, but pleasure.
Who or what inspires you?
My kids, for sure. Whenever I have a new twist or story idea, I run downstairs and I throw it at my son, and he'll get all this excited look and then have all these other ideas to build on it. So he's definitely one. Definitely my readers, too. Whenever I get someone that gets my reading and has read and been inspired by my work, that definitely inspires me. That's a lot of fun and makes me want to run out and finish the next book, you know.
What book do you wish you had written?
Oh, gosh. I would have to say Outlander, Diana Gabaldon's series. It's That's the reason that I decided to write. So I would definitely pick that one.
What is your favorite writing author moment so far?
Might have been the one this afternoon when you told me I was on the... What was it? The hot new release list.
Yeah.
That's a good moment.
That's a pretty good moment. It's just having something official like that was so fun.
Yes.
Huh?
Well, and also like laying in bed sick. I had strep throat this weekend and you text me saying I'm number 60. I'm like, what? On this little story I just put out, it was so fun.
Isn't it funny? Like you got strep throat and you're like your bestseller.
I know. I was sitting there like all grungy.
What was the way? What thing do you wish you'd been told about being a writer?
I think it's probably that the marketing takes more time than the writing. And it took me 10 years to write the first book.
Yeah, it's
so you spend so much more time. And if you don't spend that time, you don't get any results. I mean, that's really how the market is, unless you're with a traditional publisher that's doing that for you. But what I've seen, a lot of traditional published authors have to do a lot of it themselves. So I think that's crucial to any marketing plan is to build in your time to do your social media marketing and your other marketing platform.
Cool. That's wonderful. So if people want to get Blow or Stealing Time, where do they go?
Well, both of them are on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, iTunes, iPhone, iBooks, all the iThings, and pretty much anywhere you want. It's on Smashwords, so it's been distributed to every last corner of the earth. Just Google it. You'll find it in whatever platform you want.
Great. Thank you so much, KJ Waters. This is a good interview. This is so fun to do.
Yeah, it's fun to talk to you about it, Suzanne. Great.
Thank you for joining us on Blondie and the Brit.
Please join us next week where we interview Karag O'Brien. She's the author of the Birthmark Trilogy, a series of young adult dystopian novels. Her books take place in a world destroyed by climate change.
You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.
This is too much fun. Now, we hope you enjoyed today, Blondie and the Brit with KJ Waters. Stay tuned for next week when we will have another fabulous guest.